Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, continuing that thread in serendipitous journeying and adventure, I welcome to the studio Elizabeth Gunn, who's quite an author. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Very
good. Good to be here.
Excellent. Well, the title of this segment is going to be She Always Gets Her Man. So let me explain what that means. Not that it's you necessarily, because I know you're happily married, but let's go with that. Elizabeth Gunn made her living as an innkeeper in Montana while indulging hobbies as a private pilot, a liveaboard sailor, and a scuba diver. She also then finally turned to writing in 1997, and since then has written 14 mystery novels, a fair-sized row of short stories, critiques, and a novella. Triple Play was the first of her native Minnesota mystery series, featuring Detective Jake Hines, progressing through the numbers to Noontime Follies, which I believe is on deadline and coming later this year. Prompted by the pursuit, though, of a major weather and lifestyle transition, Elizabeth's second series is called Cool in Tucson. Boy, could we use more of that today. Started with her relocation here to Tucson, quite serendipitously, by the way, with her husband. It features Sarah Burke, and with the fifth in the series was called Red Man Down. It debuted at the Tucson Festival of Books back in March. Now, what you're going to understand is Elizabeth does her research to the hilt, complete with local police ride-alongs, the latest technology bells and whistles, as well as cultivating a circle of forensic and weapons specialists. She loves building characters and turning them loose on each other, and her special form of people watching that she called. I love that, turning people loose on one another. Isn't that what we are as the human, human condition?
Do.
That's what we do. That's right. Well, I have to laugh because one of the reviews I read about you, Elizabeth, it said that you decided to settle down to write. But somehow, you know, I have this picture of you convincing the local police to let you ride in the cruiser with them, and that sure doesn't sound like settling down to me.
Well, you know, the good part about writing police procedurals is that the research is very much involved in talking to and riding around with policemen and detectives, and they have the best stories in the world. And of course, they're very, you know, adaptable people because they have had to be in order to survive what they do. They do so much of police work nowadays is social work, really. You know, they help people a lot on the street and in where they find them in various situations. And so they develop a high degree of, diplomatic skills. But at the same time, they do carry pepper spray and a baton and mace and and a gun. So they are prepared to deal with rough situations if they have to. And I think that that combination of very diplomatic behavior and kindness combined with the toughness to control crowd situations and crime when they have to is a most unusual combination to find in people. Mm-hmm. So I always watch them closely because they seem, when they first talk to you, like just quite ordinary, you know, down-to-earth people. And they do have all those down-to-earth skills, but they really do have developed their characters to a highly exceptional extent, as far as being flexible and able to go from one situation to another quickly.
Yeah.
So, I like that a lot.
Yeah, and it just must be intriguing. I mean, every single one you meet must provide you additional data, shall we say, that you can rely on, both on character development but also storyline.
Yes, oh, they have the best stories in the world. And they have, they have so many funny things happen to them. So very often they're only funny in retrospect.
Yeah.
Because a lot of their situations are potentially dangerous. But they develop this very quick read. What I used to call a lifer in the innkeeping trade.
Right.
I worked in hotels all through college And then my husband and I got our own places, and we were innkeepers in Helena, Montana for a long time. And that, I guess that's why I like the flexibility of policemen, is because in the innkeeping trade, you deal with a constant flow of people. And the one thing you do have to develop is quick instincts. You have to watch people, the way they move and talk, dress, everything about them, and absorb it quickly. Because, I was in a Ma and Pa motel for a lot of that time, and you only have the time from when they open the lobby door and walk over to the desk to decide if you're going to turn over a room worth thousands of dollars to this stranger that you never saw before.
Interesting.
So you do have to develop quick judgments about people, and I guess that's why I so admire it in policemen, because I spent, you know, my whole career of earning a living, trying to get good at that very thing myself.
That's right.
Myself.
So you've got two series now. You've got Jake in Minnesota. You've got Sarah out of Tucson.
Yes,
so
I do.
I'm thinking you're one of these snowbird writers then. Right?
Well,
I mean, most people live between a hot and cold environment, but you're writing between them. My question is, but you're writing books at the same time from each place. I mean, here we said
you've got
Noontime coming up from the Minnesota series.
It would give me an excellent excuse to maintain two households. But at the same time, a lot of the time when I'm on deadline, I hardly have time to take care of the house I have, and the thought of having another one is too exhausting for me to even contemplate. So I go visit Minnesota frequently, and of course I'm going now to Wyoming and Montana and for a couple of weeks, because that's where my daughters are. I'm a person who grew up in the Midwest but then has lived all over the country.
Sure.
And so I'm pretty much at home any place. But I do know those two localities very well. Minnesota, where I grew up, and Tucson, where I live now. And they are, a great contrast to each other.
Exactly.
So the fact that I continue to write both series is a pleasant thing for me, because each book gives me a rest from the one before.
There you go. And a different geography perspective.
Yes, they are in striking contrast to each other.
So tell us about your two protagonists then. Tell me about Jake.
About
Jake Hines. Yes.
Well, Jake Hines I never write I never borrow a character whole, entire, from anyone. But he is a compendium of a good many men that I have known and interacted with intimately in Minnesota. In fact, there's a lot of both my father and brothers and various other Minnesota men.
Now, I have to hear that. It's Minnesota. I have to hear your Minnesota accent.
Yes,
right?
Yes. I still have a little of it left.
My heritage from Minnesota.
But the fact that I grew up there and went through school there and then left and have never lived there since means that when I go back to visit my family, I feel as if I am definitely from Minnesota, but not of it anymore.
Yeah.
And I believe that Jake expresses that duality in me. In other words, he, as he says, was raised by the state of Minnesota. He was a foundling. And so he belongs to the state because it raised him. It's his parent, the only one he's ever had. And in that sense, he's from Minnesota, but not totally of it. He is very often taken for an alien because he has brown skin and is a mixed race person. And that expresses the way I feel when I'm there. Like, I used to belong here and I don't quite anymore.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I've been a lot of places since I lived there.
Yeah.
And that is about where Jake's mindset is too.
So what kind of mess is Jake getting into in this next novel coming up?
Well, with this one that just ended, this one is very much a puzzle mystery. I try to try something different with each one. And for that I do borrow from the masters. And this one it just goes from one puzzle to another. It's a puzzle solving mystery.
Nice.
There are things about Minnesota attitudes and favorite sayings and so on in all of those books that are fun to use. And humor is a definite component of the mysteries that I write.
Which is a definite component of you, of course.
Yeah,
this is where Elizabeth sneaks in.
Yes. And then after it took a lot of courage for me to try it, but the book that we're talking about here, Red Man Down, is set in Tucson, and I really did hesitate a long time before I tried a Tucson novel, because the Minnesota city that I write about is, like a small city. It's more like a town turning into a city. Mm-hmm. It's a fast growing, but basically rural town in southeast Minnesota. Tucson is a fully developed metropolis. It has some sort of countrified elements, mm-hmm, about it, because it's Western. But it is an ancient town where, yeah, people have lived here for thousands of years, and it has this polyglot population that of definitely groups, clumps of people. It has some of the tribal people that have lived here for 10,000 years. It has Mexican citizens that were here long before it was a state, and some of those families are still here. It has an old component of native Tucsonan, what the Spanish would call Norte Americanos, mm-hmm, who again have lived here for a very long time, 5-6 generations, and they tend to cluster in city municipal jobs. So there are a lot of them who are in the police department and a lot in all aspects of city government. And then it has this huge component of people like you and me,
exactly,
who have been attracted to it because it's this unique southeast border city that has an exotic past and an extremely interesting and fast-changing present. And we like that, the polyglot nature of the place is deeply interesting to me.
And top of 365 days of blue sky and sunshine.
Yeah, there's that.
And
there
that we've got that. A monsoon season with a spectacular light and water show.
Yes.
Sometimes 5 times a day starting here in July.
Exactly. And the fact that, we have all this interaction with the Mexican population, which is constantly shifting and changing, if you notice. It's changed just since I've lived here and since you have. And so all of that is available to be put into a novel, and I do use it. But it was a metropolitan city that seemed very large and mysterious and had all these elements, and I wasn't at all sure that the police department would cooperate with me and help me the way they did in Minnesota. And I was quite hesitant about asking them, because it seems like a place where the cops are very busy.
Right.
and so I thought, well, they're not going to want to be bothered with me. But I was very happily surprised when I started asking questions and sort of very, politely asking if I could possibly have a ride along and so on. The happy surprise was that the police department here is every bit as helpful and cooperative as the one in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that people who work in law enforcement love to talk about their work. And a lot of people, really, would just soon not hear about it.
That's right.
So when they find somebody like me who just basically is a sponge wanting to soak it all up.
It's free help, isn't it?
Yes.
But
yes.
I think there's another element of courage that must have started and must have been somewhere in your mind, and that is you had a successful series, regardless of where it was based, with a male protagonist, and now you're going to shift, have a woman, different part of the country, but just could you... Any doubt in your mind that you'd publish novel one from the Sarah Burke series and it hit like spaghetti on the wall,
yeah,
as opposed to take off?
Yeah, yeah. The thing is, policing changed in that era, period too. When I started the Minnesota series, there almost weren't any female police personnel on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Uniformed policemen. So of course there were no detectives, because they always train their detectives out of the corpus of the police department, and they didn't have any women who'd been police personnel long enough to be trained as detectives at that time. So I had no paradigms to use. It had to be a man. But when I got to Tucson and I thought, well, then this is your chance, baby, mm-hmm, go for it, mm-hmm, to switch over and show the female component of all of this. And it turns out that now the classes that are being trained and inaugurated are very often almost 50% female.
Oh, okay.
So I had everything to draw on. And the last book, Red Man Down, that I worked on in Tucson, I was interviewing and talking to female police detectives. In fact, it was a woman who was running the homicide division of the detective crew when I wrote that book. So everything had changed.
Yeah.
I had a whole new bunch of stuff
to
talk about and hear about. And the Red Man Down thing started from a very accidental conversation that I was having with somebody, and somebody used the term the Red Man, and right away my ears perked up because it's just a, you know, it's just a catchy thing that catches, at least it caught my attention right away. And I said, "What's this? Tell me about the Red Man." And they explained to me that I have stood down in the wash and watch the canine corps train the dogs to attack, and they have a thick padded red suit that they wear, that the man wears who stands out there and plays the bad guy, so that the dogs can lunge at him and attack him. They have to train them to do that because that's what they're in the end going to have to do. And they have a red padded suit. Well, the man who trains young policemen to fight used to be called the Red Man and wear a red padded suit.
Okay.
But over time, they realized that, you know, he didn't have to be quite that spooky and unreal. and they weren't doing that kind of fighting. They were trying to teach them because they were taking young, well-behaved, properly raised young teenage people, mostly, and training them to work on the street, and many of them had never been in a real, you know,
situation,
knockdown, drag-out fight. Right. After all, they weren't training barflies,
right.
So
they didn't
expect them to have much experience in that kind of fighting. And they said they've got to know what it feels like to get hit, or they'll panic when it does happen to them. So, but what I noticed, and the reason I got onto it and decided to use it, is that I noticed when I asked anybody, "What's this about the Red Man?" they gave me a certain look, and the look was a little bit sheepish, kind of a sheepish smile. And one man said to me, "Oh yeah, I've met the Red Man," and he said it just like that. And when I asked one of the women policemen, she said, "He hit me right in the face," and she said it just like that. Well, God, my ears just really perked up because it didn't sound like anything else I'd heard from anybody before. But so that's why I got intrigued about the thinking about how do you train a young, properly raised teenager to face the rough stuff that they're going to have to face on the street. It seems almost like training somebody to jump off a cliff.
It's just such
a huge step beyond anything that they have faced before. And then I discovered the school, and that was the grand part of writing Red Man Down, is that they let me come down to the school and observe their training techniques several times. I got to watch them fight. And I got to watch them, which is equally breathtaking, trained to drive the way policemen have to drive. And they're out there and they're on this big track and they have all these orange cones set up. And when they've got a newbie in there, the cones are flying through the air because they make them do all these sharp turns and sudden stops and everything, you know. It really has very piquant moments in it going to the school.
Well, just like we said earlier, though, that you find building your characters and turning them loose on each other, it's your ultimate form of people watching.
Yes, it is.
So, my goodness, the same way to go get the roadshow of watching the cones splatter.
Oh, I tell you, it puts all other forms of entertainment in the shade.
It's really true. Well, I have to wonder, too, is there perhaps more of Elizabeth Gunn in Sarah Burke, then?
In Sarah Burke?
Yes.
Yes, there's a lot of me and Jake Hines, too.
Okay.
I don't think you can write. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of me in my bad guys, too. I think in order to write, to formulate a character, you have to connect to something inside yourself, a place inside yourself where you can understand something about that character. And one of the somewhat embarrassing truths that I have learned writing mystery novels is that villains are very much more interesting than good guys.
Yeah.
And the challenge of writing an interesting mystery is to make the good guys interesting. The villains almost write themselves. Somehow or other, vice is considerably more entertaining than virtue. Sorry, guys, but that's the way it is.
That's the way it is. Or it's easier, or it's just like
easier to describe anyway.
Describe it, or it's so it's on the surface. You can see
a little bit obvious. Yes, yeah. Yes. Whereas virtue is sort of subtle. You know?
I like that. Well, tell us then in general about the storyline of your mystery series. Do you have the end already in mind, or does it evolve as the characters travel forward with you?
Well, that has its embarrassing moments too. I just finished rewriting for the third time. Read the one I just handed in called The Noontime Follies.
Yeah.
I thought that I had written a perfectly obvious puzzle mystery, and I took it to my critique group, and they said, "We don't understand this, and this." And I realized that I had developed sort of tunnel vision. I knew these people so well, and I understood their motivation so much that in my mind it was perfectly obvious what they were doing. And in fact, I was just having a lot of trouble hiding it the way you need to do. And I guess I've developed my hiding skills to a very high level, a little bit too high.
Such that your readers couldn't figure it out.
I hid it so well they couldn't understand it. So I had to go back and put a lot more clues in.
Isn't that interesting? So the answer to my question is you really don't know until you get there.
Well, I know the end. I know who the villain is.
Yeah.
You know, I know what the crime is, and I know who the villain is all the way through. But there are many happy accidents that happen along the way.
Which keeps, of course, the journey so interesting for you as the author.
Well, right, and you know, it is the journey, after all. If you have, people ask me about outlining, I never outline, because I think if you have it too well laid out, well, then you're just dredging through through writing a book, and it's like a book report. It's like school.
It's like school. You know? It's like work.
Yeah. Whereas, I do it kind of loosey-goosey, and then a lot of the time I'm surprising myself.
Well, Elizabeth, I said in the introduction that you didn't turn formally to writing until the late 90s, but I have a hunch you were writing all your life, weren't you, as a child?
Well, in my mind, I was writing.
In your mind.
I always knew I was supposed to be, but an innkeeper is a busy person, and I raised two children besides, you know.
Sure.
And did all this boating and everything. So I was... Do you want me to share my Grandma Moses secret with
you?
Sure.
What's the Grandma Moses secret?
I was 70 years old the year my first novel came out.
Fabulous. Don't you love it? Now, I want people to know.
How's that for a circle of change?
That's a circle of change, and it tells me that all of us, anybody who says, well, I'm too old to do that,
absolutely,
that's complete nonsense.
Absolutely. They get the biggest laugh of all from me.
Got it. Well, what a pleasure. Elizabeth Gunn, please visit, folks, www.elizabethgunn, that's G-U-N-N, to learn and watch for Noontime Follies. It's coming up, as well as Red Man Down that came out here in March. What a pleasure. Thanks for the laughs and the insight, Elizabeth.
It's been a pleasure.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.